Welcome to another edition of the On the Forecheck podcast. Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Nick Morgan, joined by the Eric Gabranson to my Ben Harper, Sean Smith. Sean, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, I'll take that comparison. I'll take it all day.
I mean, it's the tall bearded men. Well, I guess in your case, it's just the bearded men.
The bearded men. Yep. Oh, he's quite handsome. I'll take it.
They really both are, in a way. They kind of got the chiselness going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, Harper, I don't know. It's far be it for me to start ranking the super hunks of the Preds, but, you know, there's a few things to be desired with Ben Harper, but it's fine.
I don't know. I relate to him because I feel like I have his, like, same kind of receding, but not quite totally receded hairline.
Yeah.
Kind of the Paul Gostad look. Ooh. A few years back.
That's handsome right there.
Yeah, we need Alex Daughtry here on the show to weigh in on that once again one of these days. But Sean, I want to start the show to address something that happened on this podcast last week.
Okay.
Now, you might remember you asked a question.
Oh, it's possible. I say a lot of things.
And that question was, is there any team you don't want to play in the first round? And I said, no, not really, because I think any first round matchup's going to be tough. So whatever happens, happens. Sean, if it's okay with you, I would like to go back and amend.
I think that's my answer. I think not only is it fine, I think it's the right thing to do.
Yes, because, dear God, do the Carolina Hurricanes have a real shot at something special this year?
Oh, they sure do.
And I think we found that firsthand this past weekend.
It was intense. That's really the only word I have for the whole experience of those two games was intensity. Big time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to pull up like the natural stat trick lines, but it was what, 24-7 shot wise in the first period.
I think they ended up giving them another shot, because I was trying to run numbers on Twitter and I said they were on pace for 72, but then I think it went up to 25 shots, so it'd be on pace for 75.
Okay, I was gonna say they gave the Hurricanes another shot.
Well, yeah.
It was something like what, like 40 shot attempts in the first period, which is like insane.
No, there was something next level going on there.
Yeah, I mean, but it drives home the point that, for as much parity as there is in the league, I think it's safe to say there are some teams that, you know, talent wise, not better or worse, but that they just don't match up right.
Right.
And I think we're seeing that with the Preds and Hurricanes the past two games, where, you know, it's not like, you know, Carolina as like individual talent is just way better. It's just their style of play is not something the Preds are equipped to handle.
No. And I think the style of play specifically is just the speed. I remember a couple of seasons, maybe it was last season before the shutdown. I was talking about how it seemed like the Predators as a team, you know, and again, this is last season, totally different team, totally different. And yeah, I mean, they had Hines at the time, but they were still kind of reeling from all of the post Laviolette stuff within the team and the style of play. But man, it's like they couldn't do anything when it came to playing a team, even like Edmonton, that's got a lot of speedy players. Again, I know they had like their top guys, and you can say what you want, but that's only a few guys. And it seemed like across the board, the speed just absolutely demolished the Predators.
And when you say speed, I think to make it clear, it's not like, you know, the Preds are slow as molasses. Cause I mean, you know, no. Guys like Victor Arvidsson's fast, but I mean, there's a difference between just being like a fast, quick skater and all five guys on the ice playing with speed.
Right. It's killer.
And there's really no, you know, you and I were talking about this kind of in our group chat the other day, like, how do you defend that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you do, unless the answer is just get more speed.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we talked so much about neutral zone play against Tampa Bay in that last game and how successful the Preds were at dominating the neutral zone, but it seemed like they just couldn't get it together to do that against the Hurricanes because they were so much faster across the board.
It does, and that's where you need your speed right there, because there's a lot of transition game. You know, you're trying to go past, you know, some of the defenders in the neutral zone. You're trying to beat guys to the puck on a dump and chase. There's a lot to happen there, and the Predators just couldn't get anything through the zone. I think that was the big thing.
Yeah,
where it was, you know, all it took was a couple of good skating moves by Carolina, and then boom, like, you know, your path to the offensive zone is completely clogged.
And I don't, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I know, and I don't want to jump ahead too much, but I know we're looking ahead to Chicago here this upcoming week. They're not as fast as Carolina, are they?
No, okay. I don't think so. I mean, and that's like the same thing. They have fast players, but as a team, like, there's a difference between like Patrick Kane being a once in a generational skater and, you know, being able to blow by guys and stick handle past guys. And then there's a difference between that and, you know, five guys who are able to, you know, go full speed without breaking a stride, but still make that great pass into space. That's Carolina to me.
Yeah, you lost me at five guys. I'm kind of hungry, and now I'm thinking about burgers. I'm sorry.
If you're going to go five guys, talk about the fries.
Well, what I like about that is if you order fries, they don't just put them in a little container. They just throw a bunch of fries in the bag. Like, we're just throwing fries in there. The fries will insulate the burgers.
Well, the best thing is they do put it in the container. It's like that small cup with, yeah, like fries in it, but then there's like 50,000 fries up top. Like, it's almost like a Happy Meal toy where it's just, they give you like the little cup as a,
it's like a consolation prize.
Yeah, exactly.
This cup is clearly not the right size for the fries we're trying to give you, so we're just going to throw them all in.
Exactly. Oh, it broke. All Oops. Right, we'll just throw it on top of your foil wrapped burgers.
Yes, I like that.
Making me hungry at 10 o'clock at night right now. Probably not a good sign.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm looking through the. I found the stat line. It was in terms of Corsi, 47 shot attempts for Carolina to 11 in just that first period. Carolina wound up with 88 shot attempts that game.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous level. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, for people who don't follow stats that much, I would say like 50 to 60 is probably average for an entire game.
Yeah.
So when you're hitting almost 50 in one period, dear God, you're either doing something very right or the other team is doing something very wrong.
Well, you'd think, though. I mean, what was the final score? Remind me.
Final score was 3-1.
3-1, and so one of those goals was an empty net goal, right?
Yes.
You're really only looking at two goals scored on Saros.
Yes, and that led me to the topic I want to make. How ugly would that game have been if UC Saros hasn't been on the tear he's been on lately?
It would have been... well, you know, the Preds have had some wins recently that were pretty one-sided, and I'm pretty sure it would have just been one of those going the other way.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, the debate, it's like, oh, well, you know, one goalie is not going to be able to, you know, keep it up, or, you know, this play is not sustainable. I mean, it's not, but the argument to be made is when you have a hot goalie, and, you know, we say, well, anything can happen if you have a hot goalie. I mean, look at the Preds last month. I mean, yeah, for as good as the team has played, for as better as they've been from now until, like, the first part of the year, I mean, UC Saros has been the difference maker.
Big time. I don't think you have that success that they've had without Saros being hot.
Nowhere close.
No. And, you know, I think it's a really hard topic for me. I'm sure it is for you. I'm sure it is. I mean, it's hard to talk about. I think it's hard to hear too, is that, you know, when you say how bad would that be without Soros, you know, what are you really saying? You know, you're saying how bad would it have been if Pecorine was playing? And that's hard for me to discuss. It's emotionally hard. It's difficult, you know, to say we can't necessarily rely on Pecorine to do the same thing that Soros is doing right now. So it's a really good thing we have Soros, but you know, we went through a period of time where Soros was injured and Pecorine came in and he played a lot better, in that situation than I think we had seen toward the beginning of the season. But, does he have that in him if something happens to Soros again?
I mean, to your point, he was playing better, but it was also one of those things where, okay, is this just a hot stretch, or is this going to be vintage Pecorine where he's able to play ungodly levels of hockey for, you know, 2-3 months and will the Predators in the playoffs have no business being in? I don't think that Pecorine is there anymore, but I do like the thought that Pecorine can come in and still steal a game. Well, you know, obviously because of where the Predators are, and not trying to get ahead of ourselves and the topic of conversation rundown, but I think you're going to see UC Soros play pretty much every game from here on out.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'll tell you too, you know, you mentioned, and again, it's not fun to talk about. Nobody wants to hear it. You mentioned Pecorine not being able to come in and play that way for a sustained period of time. Is what you're saying that he's not as good as he once was, but he's as good once as he ever was?
Yes. And I think you've seen it this year. You know, he's, without saying too much, I think we can all agree Pecorine is not prime Pecorine. But that's okay. He's late 30s. He's right now in the role he probably should be in. But at the same time, we have seen a lot of games this year where it's been vintage Pekka. And, you know, not just, you know, putting in a high number of saves, but kind of getting those saves that you really shouldn't make.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the, like, you know, if you get like, you know, 40 shots on goal and you let in 4, you know, I don't think anybody is really blaming you for that loss, but right. There's also, you know, if you allow one goal and you're like diving across the net and save, and you know, you're taking away those quote unquote easy goals. That's how you steal games.
Right.
Pekka's done that this year. He hadn't really done that the past couple of years, but he's done that this year in small doses, of course.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But I'll tell you, I was just making a Toby Keith joke. And you took it very seriously, and it was a very good answer.
I don't listen to Toby Keith.
Well, I never do it voluntarily, but sometimes things happen, you know.
I mean, if you were going to say, talk about I or me or I don't know. I know that's like the only Toby Keith song I know besides the, like the one that's like so patriotic, you can just see like Big Mac shooting out of his dumb little cowboy hat whenever he sings it.
that's America.
Yeah, the boot in your ass, God bless USA. I don't know. If Toby Keith, if you're listening to the On the Forecheck podcast, I'm sorry. I just don't know your music that well.
I think he would say that's okay. You know, I mean, you can't expect everyone to know your music. At least you know the important ones, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, if Reba McEntire wanted to give us a shout out on air, that'd be fine.
I'm going to be straightforward. If anyone just moderately famous wanted to give us a shout out, I think it would be fine. I wouldn't complain. And Toby Keith, if you're listening, just shout, holler out, say something. Just be like, hey, guys, just appreciate the show. go America. And I'm
well,
I'm
he's happy. He's not going to say that now after the past 2 minutes of conversation. Well,
you know, it's you don't know. He's probably a very understanding and benevolent man, and he's probably just full of kindness. So,
well, Ben Harper was probably going to give us a shout out until he heard your handsome comment, and then he wants nothing to do with us now.
Yeah.
Probably at this point, half the Preds want nothing to do with us, but we'll keep on trucking along.
But you know, there is a point there, and it's what's hard is that if we were going to do a podcast where it was just extravagant praise only, I don't think it would get a very decent audience. And so it's you know, I enjoy watching National Predators hockey, but you know, it's one of those things. Sometimes you have to be realistic about situations, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the most popular thing. You know, it's okay though, right?
Well, speaking of being honest about the Predators, like we mentioned, playoff prospects are getting a little more hazy than they were. Right now, they have exactly 10 games left to play in this season. Unless I'm doing math horribly wrong.
No, you're right.
No, I'm right. Yeah. Okay. I was just quickly glancing at the standings, so who knows. They have 49 points. Not even to tell you how far behind they are Florida and Tampa Bay, because I don't think they're going to catch them.
No one is.
No. But the big number for fans to realize is they're only 2 points ahead of Chicago. Chicago has a game in hand. They're also now only 3 points ahead of the Dallas Stars. The Dallas Stars have 3 games in hand, and they're 6-2-2 in their last 10. So they're starting to find their groove at the right time.
Yeah, you know, and I you know, it's funny you mentioned, like, well, there's people who aren't that familiar with stats and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm not a super big stat head, but I really do enjoy looking at Micah Blake McCurdy stuff on ineffective math. And one of the things he always has up there are the playoff probabilities. And, you know, I'd been tracking, I'm going to look it up right now, actually, since we're talking about it, but I'd been tracking and kind of keeping up with how much the Predators' chances change based on, you know, one night of games. And it has really just come back to even. And it's like I think there's like maybe a 0.1% difference between the Predators' chances and the Stars' chances. Yeah, I just found it right now. And here's what it is. You know, you've got in the Central, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Florida, all at 99.9 something. You know, looking farther down that list, you've got Columbus and Detroit pretty much statistically eliminated. Chicago is carrying a 13.6 chance. And then Dallas has 43.3% and Nashville has 43.1%. And that was like over the last two games, the Predators went from like 65% to Dallas's like 20, and it's just 2 losses, 2 wins. And then boom, it's a dead heat. And it's funny because we're talking more about Chicago, especially with them coming up. But the reason I think they're ranked so low, if you look at their remaining schedule, 2 games against Dallas, 3 games against Carolina, two games against Florida, game against Tampa Bay, and then the other 3 are against the Predators. So once they get through the Predators, they're only facing the top of the league. And I don't just mean division, I mean league, because those 3 teams are ridiculous.
Well, I think you're also probably seeing a little bit of why Chicago is right now even in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, because they haven't had all those games.
And, you know, but I think people are talking about this next series against Chicago, which is our next topic, by the way. But people are talking about this series in Chicago because it's the biggest chunk of, you know, I guess you'd say the biggest chunk of playoff pasture that's left to mow right now. Yeah. I mean, the Preds, for all intents and purposes, can more or less knock the Blackhawks out of the picture.
Yeah.
With 3 wins. And at the same time, if the Preds, Well, you know what? I'll ask you this. How many games of this series do you think the Predators absolutely have to win?
Well, you know, it's a good question. And I think the reason that that's a good question is because they do need to win the games, because that prevents Chicago from gaining on them and really extends the difference. But, you know, the bad thing is the Predators are done playing against the Stars. And that's really the team.
Well, they have one game left against the Stars.
Oh, they do? No, really?
May 1st, yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah, May 1st.
Oh, look at that.
At home. I believe this is one of those early games that were canceled.
Yeah, okay.
It was either for COVID or the storm outage.
I've got like three different schedules I'm looking at, so that's never good. But yeah, you know, you've got, okay, so they've got one game left against Dallas. That's a must win game.
For sure.
That's a must win game. So you want that to kind of, you want that moment when you play against Dallas, that's where you want to say, okay, this cements the fact that we've got the spot. You know, you've got two games after that against Columbus, and then two games to close the season against Carolina. So you kind of, you have to look at those games against Chicago as, you know, and you said, how many do you absolutely have to win? I think you need to win at least two of them. You're a lot better off if you win all three of them, but you know, that's, I mean, can you go completely undefeated against Chicago this season? I mean, Tampa Bay couldn't even do that against the Predators this season. So, you know, it's, you would like to think that they could pull that off. I would like to think they can pull it off. I think they can pull it off. But I'd say must win is two games.
Well, here's, I guess, another wrinkle in that argument, because this is Dallas's schedule. Four consecutive games against the Red Wings this week.
Oh.
Monday, Tuesday in Dallas, and then Thursday, Saturday in Detroit.
Mm.
Now, their schedule does pick up a little bit after that. They have two games against Carolina, a game against Tampa before playing us, Nashville, and then they have games against Florida, two against Tampa, and two against Chicago to close the year. So, you know, but so, I mean, there are some tough games on the horizon for them, but this, they have four straight against Detroit and then close with two against Chicago. Not exactly the toughest schedule. So, I mean, if you say that Dallas is playing as well as they have, and they still have three games in hand on Nashville, you know, Dallas can make up some ground this week too.
They can. And I think, though, you know, the reality is with one game left against Dallas, I mean, every game, that's an opportunity to get 2 points. And as long as you keep getting 2 points, then you're staying ahead of the competition. I guess the thing, though, I noticed this, and this is really odd, but do you know what the Predators have right before Dallas? They have three days off in a row.
Interesting.
Yeah. And those are home games against Florida on Monday and Tuesday, and they have Wednesday through Friday off, and then they play Dallas at home on Saturday. I mean, you want to talk about a team being well rested and having a chance to work on some stuff. You know, they could really come into that game ready to go. When does Dallas play Tampa Bay before the Predators? You said they have them right before the Predators. What day is it?
Oh, I really wish you would ask that before I closed out my tab.
Well, I will open up mine.
They do. They have one game the week before, or no, the week of. So like they play the Predators on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
They play Tampa on Thursday.
So they're okay. So, you know, and are they playing Tampa on the road?
They are.
So they're on the middle of a road trip at that point, and then they've got one day of recovery. So it could really, you know, those are two teams that play what I like to call big boy hockey, and, you know, they could beat each other up well enough. The Stars come in worn down. I'll take that.
The other thing is that's interesting with the Dallas schedule is they play their last home game of the season on April 27th.
Wow.
And then after that, they have seven road games to end the year.
Oh, yikes.
So to your point, there's going to be some travel. There's going to be some tiredness. Also, this is going to be, you know, kind of an example that we really haven't seen this year, but with COVID cancellations, and you know, Dallas also had some severe weather emergencies earlier this year.
Yeah,
we're kind of getting into that weird team playing an insane amount of games to end the year to make up from all the earlier games that got canceled. So Dallas is going to be a prime example of that. And, you know, they're not the first team to, you know, play a lot of games in a short amount of time. I mean, that happens every year, but they're playing progressively more than every other team, probably besides like Vancouver. So that's going to be something to watch out for is, you know, is Dallas going to get banged up down the stretch? Whereas the Preds, who have, for the most part, done a pretty good job of, you know, not having any games moved or canceled. You know, there's going to be a chance, as you mentioned, for the Predators to maybe be a little more well-rested.
Yeah. And I think that's a big deal. I think that's a big deal. There's a lot of games. And you say that the Stars have three games in hand. Well, they also have the same amount of time to play them. So a lot more hockey going on for them. A lot more opportunities for, you know, people to get banged up, injured, worn down, all that stuff.
Well, speaking of getting banged up and get injured, guess who's been banged up and injured this year?
Mostly everyone on the Predators.
Yes. But the good news is players are starting to slowly and surely come back. We saw Matt Duchene make his return to the lineup.
Yes.
Last Saturday. It was Saturday, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't Thursday. Okay. Yeah. He came back Saturday. Eric Gabranson also made his Preds debut.
He did.
Let's start with the hot topic after the trade deadline. What did you think of Gabranson first game?
Okay. You know, here's the thing. I try not to be all sky is falling, you know, there's nothing left to lose, kind of, you know, that reaction. I don't know that that's really productive. And so I said before the game, I'm going to give him a fair chance. And, you know, I didn't see him do anything that made me go, oh, no, this is horrible. And maybe I watched the whole game. Maybe there's things I didn't see. But I did see him make some really strong defensive plays in the neutral zone, which I was pretty happy about. So I'm not going to sit here and say that he is the next Norris Trophy winner, but I'm going to say that he seems to be just fine.
No. You know, there's a certain contingent of players that you don't want to be noticeable. That's their role.
Yeah.
I think the best way to describe it is like when you put them on the ice, nothing happens, and people kind of have like negative connotations of that.
Right.
But I mean, you know, they're not doing anything offensively, but they're not letting the other team really do anything either.
Right.
That's, I think, maybe what you could get out of Eric Gabranson. And on the best day, I mean, that's what you really want from your entire bottom pair.
Right.
And what was the famous thing you used to say last year when, you know, Weber and Irwin were kind of getting everybody's ire?
Were there famous things I was saying last season?
the thing you always said.
Yannick Weber is a kind man and an excellent chef. Hold on. Okay.
You always have
to remind me.
You always said we're spending more time talking about them.
Oh yeah.
Playing time than they're getting playing time.
You shouldn't spend more time talking about a player than they are on the ice on any given night. And
but
you're right.
But why did we start talking about Irwin and Weber last year?
Because they were noticeable.
Yes.
Yes.
And so there was the role. That's the thing about the bottom pair is, and you know, we're talking about it now because there's a very intense conversation on either side. You know,
right.
Some people are like, a good, you know, if your bottom pair sucks, your entire defense sucks.
Yeah.
You know, other people are like, oh, well, you know, what do you expect them to be, Roman Yossi?
Right. You're not.
And yeah, I mean, there's, but it's funny. And the truth is it's somewhere right in the middle of it. You had a very good a way of putting it earlier this week, where, you know, really it's just, you know, your sixth defenseman is just out there to cut down on the playing time. Yes. your top four guys get.
Well, and that was a big point at the beginning of the season with the addition of Borowiecki and Binning, was the idea behind their signing and spending a little bit more money on that third pairing than they had previously spent in years past, was let's get a couple of guys in here that have some defensive upside as opposed to just being a pylon, that can eat up some minutes and take them away from guys like Josi and Ellis and Ekholm and Fabro, so they're not on the ice 26, 27 minutes a night. And I think what's gone overlooked in the acquisition of Gudbranson is that he was averaging 18 minutes a night. And that's a lot more than you were seeing in previous seasons with the Predators' third pairing.
Yeah, I think when we were like looking at playoff stats last year, Jared Tenorti only averaged like maybe about 7 minutes of ice time in that Arizona series.
Yeah.
Weber, who was playing with him, averaged, I think, around 10, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. But then you look over at Arizona and, you know, their defensive depth's not as good as Nashville, but you had Jordan Osterley playing like 16 minutes.
And, right.
You know, that's when you're able to give like Jacob Chychrun a rest for a while and Oliver Ekman-Larsson a rest. I mean, there is something to be said for pride that, hey, Roman Josi can go out there for 30 minutes and still look awesome and play awesome the entire game. But at the same time, you know, you want to preserve him long term. And, you know, you want, we've kind of seen it this year, like the things happen with your defense. You had Fabro get suspended. You had Ryan Ellis out for a while. You want somebody who's going to be able to go out there and, you know, play 18, 19 minutes if he has to.
Right.
So I think that was kind of my thing last year with the third pair, is it just seemed like they're kind of more of a, well, these are our two best remaining defensemen. We don't really trust them, but we need somebody to fill the bottom pair. There you go.
Yeah, and somebody has to be out there.
Yes. All 7 minutes they play. But I agree. I think that one guy I really want to bring up is Matt Benning. I mean, Matt Benning to me has been a very under the radar pickup this year.
I think so.
You've seen it the past couple of games when he's been paired with Josi. I mean, granted, everybody plays well with Josi, but that's right. Another example. A guy who is a perennial third pair. You don't really notice him a whole lot, but I mean, he's stepped up his game when the Predators have asked him to.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I was curious. I was really, really curious. I just jumped over to take a look at the time on ice from that game. Josi was on the ice. Total? Let's see. Total. It looks like 22 minutes, 48 seconds. Benning was on there. No, it's not. The most amount of time was Ekholm and Ellis, but it's probably because they spent time on both the on the penalty kill and the power play. Josi spent about 3 minutes on the power play. But Binning had 16 minutes, 14 seconds, spent 3 minutes on the penalty kill. Gudbranson, 15:40. And that's a pretty big deal. And Harper was 12 and a half minutes on the ice. So you're seeing someone come in that's able to play. And he played 15 minutes and 40 seconds. I think he was on the ice for a goal, against, obviously. But, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily think it was his fault, or I think I would have remembered it. And at the same time,
the internet would have remembered it.
It would have been hurled around like, you know, the hot potato of blame. And it would have landed squarely in his lap, and it hasn't. So that tells me that he played 15 minutes and 40 seconds, allowed Josi to take a little bit of a rest. And that's what you want out of somebody like Gudbranson. And if he's doing that, then I think that's great.
You know, it's funny. We spent so much time talking about Gabranson's first game this past Saturday. Everybody forgot Matt Duchene also happened to come back.
That's right.
Yeah, that guy, the guy we're paying $8 million a year to come play hockey for.
The return of the Matt. That's right. Yeah.
You know, decent return. I mean, I think it's like, I know that for a couple of reasons that we're probably going to touch on here in a second, that I think anything a returning player like Duchene does is going to be under the microscope. But,
yeah,
you know, he was also out for, what was it? Wound up being about a month, a little over a month and a half.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe it was 5 weeks.
Yeah.
5 weeks.
I think it was a little over a month. Yeah. But, you know, he's not going to be 100%, but he made some plays. Good forechecking. Set up, you know, once the Predators kind of in that middle of the second period really started to get some offense going, he made a couple of good plays.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably for these next, you know, one or two games, that's probably what you want for Duchene, is to just play like an above average game.
Yep. He's getting reacclimated. That's what you got to look for, is he just going out and playing sound hockey? Because if he is, then he's doing exactly what you need him to do. You don't need him to come in and be an offensive or defensive superstar from his first game back. You just need him to be out, go out there and get used to game speed again. And it shouldn't take long, but that's all you're really looking for.
Of course not. I mean, you can say that for a lot of players. And sure, I think as the weeks turn, you're going to want your $8 million player to kind of be more of a don't screw anything up to take control of the game mode.
Right.
But you know, Saturday was fine for Matt Duchene.
Yeah. I have no complaints. I think he was just fine.
Yeah. Well, we brought up the concern because chemistry is the hot button topic for Preds Twitter. And there is some truth to be said for that.
Hold on. This is important. Oh my goodness. I was looking at numbers. Now, I know that's not my normal thing, but guess who had the most takeaways on the entire team on Saturday?
Matt Duchene.
He had 3.
All right.
And guess how many giveaways he had?
0.
0. That's pretty good.
The thing for Matt Duchene to me is that, you know, I'm not a big, like, micro stats person, because I think at some point you have to, you know, look at how many goals are actually going in the net, because that's how games are won and lost. Right. But at the same time, it's like you look at the stats and Matt Duchene is far from the biggest problem. I mean, you even watch him on film and you can see that Matt Duchene is far from the biggest problem.
Well, that's, you know, not necessarily what a lot of people would say, though. I think regardless, he's going to get a lot of grief from people. And I think it's mainly related to the fact that he's not showing up in the goals column.
For sure. I mean, I would say part of that is him being snake bitten. I mean, I know that's a word people hate. and I get it, because it's, you know, if you can say they're snake bitten, somebody else can say they're not good at finishing. And there's probably some truth in that. But at the same time, you know, I guess here's my big takeaway. You don't need people to score like 70, 80, 90 points per year. You just need them to help you win.
That's a very good point.
And a lot of times Matt Duchene has helped the Predators win.
Yeah. I mean, you look at I don't know. 3 takeaways. Nobody had 3 takeaways on either team. I mean, that's, to me, that says that's 3 times that he took a chance for the Hurricanes to get into their zone and get set up away from them and turn that over to the Predators and gave them a chance. That's pretty good. That's helping your team. Granted, they didn't win, but he 3 times he helped shift the momentum in that game.
All right. Well, are you ready to talk about chemistry now?
Yeah.
Going back to that.
Sorry about that. Oh, I got all fired up.
You're just excited for numbers.
No, look at me. Yeah. Brian would be proud.
Yes. But chemistry, I think, is a little bit of a fair topic to discuss because there's been so many young players who have stepped in the lineup and have played really well, have given the Preds some good minutes, that now that you have some guys returning to the lineup, you start wondering who's going to go out, and then you start wondering about shuffling lines. And I get that argument. I really do. Yeah, I'm not going to bash anybody for concerns over team chemistry.
No, and interestingly, what Hines was talking about a while back was he said, when you have a player come out of the lineup for whatever reason, he's looking at maintaining the identity of those lines. He's not looking to, try to fit somebody onto a line where they don't belong. And so it's interesting now that you have the issue of, okay, well, what do we do when players come back? Because that's a totally different problem to have, albeit it's a good problem to have, is that you're getting people healthy again. So the question becomes, okay, so Matt Duchesne's ready to come back in the lineup. Where does he fit? Is he guaranteed a spot? Probably because he gets paid $8 million a year. I would say yes.
So yeah, he's not being healthy scratched like some people were suggesting.
Yeah. So where do you put him? Well, okay, so he is definitely going to get to play, but are you going to put him on the first line just because it would kind of ruin the chemistry that line's had? Are you going to put him on the second line just because, or do you say, one of the spots where we've had a lot of different players playing is on the wing, on that third line with Halla and Cousins. And they seem to be a line that has some upside both offensively and defensively. So if you look at kind of who's stepped into that role, with Rem Pitlick being the most recent, he's a fast guy that's good in transition, and he's got a pretty good nose for the puck and getting to the puck and getting the front of the net. Well, who else kind of fits that bill is Matt Duchesne. So it makes perfect sense that they would have played him there. I don't know if that's the long-term plan, but there's definitely a chance that he could see a few games there before seeing if what he starts doing on that line fits better with another line.
Yeah, and I like how you said identity of the lines instead of just one line, two line, three line, because I do think people make too big of a deal about line numbers. In modern NHL, you're playing your top three lines pretty consistently. There's not much of a drop off between your first line and a third line for most teams. Fourth line is a little bit hazy depending on your team and your depth, but if that's where Matt Duchesne winds up, is quote unquote the third line, if he's a fit with Holland Cousins, then by all means play him there.
Yeah, and the important thing is it's like Too Short said, you got to get in where you fit in. And if he's not going to come in and be a really good fit on the fourth, on the third line, on the second line or the first line, those are just numbers. And if you look, yeah, I guess that you could rank them by the time they spend on the ice. But it seems like that fourth line, the herd line, whatever you want to call it, has been starting pretty much every game. So, they're all going to play at some point. Some will play more than others. Everybody's got a role to play. Every line's got an identity.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the identity and you mentioned the herd line, because that is a textbook example of what we're talking about. Just doesn't matter who's in there. That's a line that is going to give you some meaningful minutes. We've seen it this year when Olivier got hurt. Everybody was like, is the chemistry going to fall off? This happening? Is that going to happen? Blah, 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 blah. Tanner Janot stepped in and has played fantastic. If you took the numbers away from those players, you really wouldn't be able to tell a difference.
No, I don't think so. And I guess if you're looking at identity, and again, that's, you said I brought it up. That's been what Hines has said to describe that line. These are all his words. He's looking at, I think, what's best for the team. And, okay, so Duchesne comes back. Does he fit with the herd line? Does his style of play fit what they would do?
Are you asking?
Well, yeah.
No. No, I don't think so. No.
No. So, I mean, what would the point be in trying to shoehorn him into that line? It doesn't make any sense. You know, you keep, I mean, arguably, they took Rem Pitlick out of the lineup. He's probably a player with a lot more offensive upside than the guys playing on the Hurd line. But why do you take him out? Because you take out somebody when you put someone back in that kind of matches that identity. There's no reason to start messing around with that fourth line if you've got somebody to put in that doesn't fit on that fourth line. I guess I'm trying to make that. There's a point I'm trying to make. I'm not sure if it's clear or not.
There is. And let me see if I can try to lead into that a little bit.
Okay.
Is the point that for the last several years pre-Hines, it seemed like the Predators were just stacking players and not having line identity?
It seems like it to me, but at the same time, Laviolette wasn't someone who was going to give you a very good explanation on why he was doing what he was doing. He was just
I mean, when you have like Kyle Turris on the fourth line, Kyle Turris isn't a fourth line player.
No.
Even from like the standpoint of, oh, well, we just want some scoring on our fourth line. You know, you put him with Colton Sissons, who's a defensive stalwart, and Austin Watson, who, quite frankly, they just never figured out how to use.
Right.
But, you know, that's the thing. We saw that. I think a very good example of that was it 2019 when they got Mikael Granlund, Wayne Simmonds, Ryan Boyle. You know, they just kind of acquired players and stacked the lines and were just like, okay, well, these are just four collection of players we're rolling out.
Yeah. No identity.
I will say that about Hines, is it seems like he's going more for how he wants each group to play in a certain situation, like how he envisions using his third line, how he envisions using his, like, quote unquote, checking line, his grit line.
Right.
How he envisions using his third defensive pair.
Right.
As opposed to, well, here's just a stack of players. Let's figure out how to make them work.
Well, there, not to say that there weren't lines with an identity under Laviolette, because you had the Jofa line. That was clearly a line that was supposed to be your dominant scoring line. And you also had what would you call it? I don't think any of the nicknames ever really took off, but the Bonino line from last year with Craig Smith and Rocco Grimaldi, that line had an identity. It's just that those are the only two lines with an identity. I think it's a lot easier now to see that there's an identity for every line.
I think you're right. And I think that's a big change from, I would say really a big change from the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
That's been a noticeable thing. And, you know, it's going to be interesting when people like Ellie Tolvanen and Philip Forsberg come back, you know, if they're going to kind of wind up in the spots they were, or if, you know, certain players playing better and certain young players stepping up is going to cause Hines to kind of see, you know, maybe get a little bit more experimentative, kind of see like maybe this person can go in a certain situation. Maybe somebody like Arvidsson could like drop down to a third pair and play really well next to somebody like Nick Cousins and Erik Haula. You know, there's options there. And that's, I think, you know, people are looking at, you know, players coming back and potentially quote unquote, you know, taking roster spots away or quote unquote ruining chemistry.
Yeah.
The other way to look at it is just Hines has options now.
Yep. Straight up. He's got a lot of options. I don't know. Is it an envious position? I think it would be. I feel like you're going to face criticism regardless of what you do, because you're either putting someone who's returning from injury in for someone who's quote unquote earned a spot, or, you know, you could be criticized for that, or you could be criticized for taking that player out who's earned the spot in favor of someone coming back in. So I don't know that he's really got I think he's got the sword of Damocles hanging over him on this one.
Well, it's better than past seasons and past situations that he can be in.
You're definitely right.
Yeah, I mean, the other way to look at it is the Preds have been banged up, injured, and outplayed in a lot of games, and right now they're still in the playoffs, so they're doing something right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I needed a drink of water, so I think this is a good place to take our first break of the day.
Sounds good.
So, Sean, you know the drill by now, don't you?
Yeah.
As we go to break, trivia time.
Yes.
All right, you ready for this one? This is a good one.
I'm probably not ready, but go ahead.
All right. So, Victor Arvidsson has 10 career shorthanded goals. He is one away from tying the Preds' all-time record for shorthanded goals. Who has that record?
Do you want me to answer that?
Well, I'm going to give you a second to think about it.
I would like that.
And then at the other side of the break, you can answer.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Sean, as we went to break, I asked you this question. Victor Arvidsson has 10 goals, 10 career shorthanded goals. He is one away from tying the Predators' all-time shorthanded goals record. Who's number one?
Now, I've had some time to think about this, and I assure you I've done no research, but I feel pretty strongly about this one, and I'm going to say it's David Legwand.
It is not.
Seriously?
Victor Arvidsson is tied
with
David Legwand. Okay. Legwand has 10,
okay.
But there's one person who has the record ahead of him.
So I feel pretty good about that guess, then. That's not bad.
It is a former captain.
Okay.
Greg Johnson.
Really?
With 11 shorthanded goals as a Pred.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive considering those early days were not a lot going on.
Well, they were kind of playing shorthanded anyway.
Yeah, I guess they were. In a way, they were shorthanded every single game.
Yeah.
Good times.
Oh, man.
Wow. Well, Sean, we do have some more hockey talk.
Okay.
But it's a different kind of hockey talk.
Okay.
So... earlier today, because I was bored, I started binging all the Mighty Ducks movies again. They're on ESPN Plus now.
Okay.
In case anybody listening wants to take a stab at it, take a stab at a binge watching marathon. And that brought up the question to me, because I noticed certain players, you know, after you've seen it a number of times, you go back and actually try to scout the fictional hockey players. And I have some strong opinions on them. So here's what I want us to do.
Okay.
I want us to pick the best player of the Mighty Ducks franchise.
Okay.
The worst player of the Mighty Ducks, and then okay. I want you to give me an overrated and an underrated.
Okay, let me write this down, because I've had no prep time whatsoever.
This is kind of a shout out to Greg Wozinski and Sean McIndoe at Puck Soup, but this happened to cross my mind as I was watching it today. Plus, nobody sent in any mailbag questions, so you know, I guess that's a good thing.
Well, no, I'd like mailbag questions.
I do too. So if you have any, when we put out the call, please send them in. So underrated, overrated, and then best and worst.
Oh, okay. Okay. So let's see. Best, worst, overrated, underrated. All right. Well, okay. Why don't you start with whichever one? And while you're talking, I'm going to come up with what I think.
Okay. So I'm going to go best. And I'm going to go on a limb here, because I think everybody automatically says Adam Banks.
Right.
But Adam Banks couldn't stay healthy.
No.
You know who single-handedly won that game in D3, the Mighty Ducks? My pick, Julie the Cat Gaffney.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we've seen it with UC Saros and Pekka Rinne over the past decade. If you have a good goalie, you can steal games you have no business being in.
And no, you're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, she's lights out in D3. Like, that varsity, junior varsity game, I mean, come on.
No, you know, it's funny because you know, you kind of gave me a little bit of heads up on this. I don't want to ruin the magic out there in TV land, but you know, really without sitting down and looking at a list, because like we watch Mighty Ducks movies a lot in my house. I've got two kids. They both love the movies. We've really watched the first one a lot. And when I was younger, I watched the first one a lot as well. Second one I'd seen a few times. Third one I could, it exists. It's a movie. But, you know, when you said we got to pick the best one, first one popped in my mind without even having to think about it was the cat.
I think the cat lady.
I don't understand why, and I never will, that, and I will know, I do understand why, because of the magic of Hollywood. But I never understood why they brought in someone who was like a ringer in the net, and they always treated her like a second class citizen on the team. Like, oh gosh, we got to play her. Oh, she's really good at hockey. We're so much better with Goldberg. Oh,
well, she also had one minute of game action the entire Goodwill Games tournament, and it was just coming in to do the last save of the game.
Yeah.
On like a slap shot from the high slot on the shootout.
Garbage.
But I mean, she got to shine in the third one, which kind of brings up the question, what was Gordon Bombay thinking sticking with Goldberg that long?
I would love to say, you know, gosh, it doesn't make any sense, but have you ever seen a coach just stick with someone, not necessarily a goaltender, but just stick with the player for just reasons that are totally unapparent to anyone who's watching the game?
Matt Irwin played for so many games.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You know, there's just some coaches that get a player stuck in their head and they're like, nope, this guy's playing every time. And, you know, Goldberg, give me a break. You know, come on.
Well, it's funny you say that, because my pick for worst is Goldberg.
Really?
It is. I mean, he was a goalie who's like diving out of the way.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, tell me, okay, this is Goldberg the goaltender. All right. Goldberg the defender in D3 had some redeeming moments, scored the game-winning goal, also some decent minutes, but Goldberg the goaltender.
Right.
Name one one moment from those first two movies where he like stole the show. And I'm not talking about being like the acting fun steal the show.
Right. I can't.
No, he didn't. He was like diving out of the way.
Yeah.
Like, you imagine like Twitter today, if like like Malcolm Subban for the Blackhawks tomorrow just has like a 3-on-0 breakaway, skates backwards and points towards the empty net, like you're modeling a prize on The Price is Right.
Right.
It's trash. He's trash.
It's not going to go over well.
No. All right. Your pick for worst.
You know, I was kind of undecided on that. And I hate that it seems like we're going down the list just agreeing with each other, but Goldberg is the worst on the team. No doubt about it. And I think his badness is only magnified by Gaffney's goodness, if that makes sense. I don't even have like some like crazy, you know, tangent to go off on. You're just, again, like you said, take any player today. I mean, they don't even have to be a goaltender, but take any player that when the net's empty just goes and says, here you go, I'm not even going to stand in your way. Net's wide open. Take a shot. Yeah, they would get
Sergei Kostitsyn, maybe.
Well, maybe, but they would get destroyed in social media quickly, and probably in the locker room. Nobody would ever think that what they did was okay.
I like how we're. I like how we're thinking of the Mighty Ducks in the context of how would social media react. I mean, can you imagine like Stephen A. Smith if Dwayne Robertson did the jump off the bench to lasso rope a player in the middle of a game? Can you imagine like that conversation on SportsCenter?
Oh, man. I don't know.
I don't know what this man is doing. can't wait for NHL on ESPN.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I think, you know, you gave me a good idea. And I don't know how we could work it out, but we need to set up a time when we can we could watch the movie together, mm-hmm. and record it. And then you also get everybody else on Twitter to watch it at the same time. And everybody just tweets about it like it's a live game.
Did you so it sounds like you pitched an OTF movie night, and I'm 100% down for that.
Okay, I have no idea how to make that work. Is that something we can do?
I think that's something we can do. Absolutely. Got to get the live stream up and running.
Yeah.
I think we can make some magic happen with that.
Yep. Big time.
All right. Let's go. I want to save the spicy take for last. So let's go most underrated Mighty Duck.
Okay.
I'm going to let you go first.
Now, okay, define underrated.
So underrated is not like... Go ahead.
Well, I think underrated, and I think my initial thought is this is someone who contributes to the team a lot more than people realize. But, you know, then maybe someone say, well, you know, this is someone who just gets overlooked all the time. And I don't really know if there's a difference between those two. But I, you know, I'm going to say this. I think the most underrated player on the team, and maybe it's controversial, I don't know, I'm going to say it's Fulton Reed. I'm going to tell you why.
Oh.
He has a dramatic impact on that team from the moment he joins it. And he kind of exists as the heart and soul of that team, definitely through the first movie. You know, as he goes, so goes the team. And I think, you know, he's loyal to the coach, and he recognizes that they have something special going on, and he's willing to go in and play whatever role they ask him to play. To me, that's who you want on your team.
It's funny because I was thinking of Fulton Reed as an overrated player.
Really?
But when you say it like you just said it, you have a point.
Hmm.
I mean, he does have an impact on the team. He's like kind of one of those, you know, maybe a good comparison for him would be like Chris Chelios from, you know, like the late 2000s Red Wings.
Yeah.
Like was kind of pylonish, but was just a good personality, good person to have in the locker room.
The heart and soul of the team.
Yeah. And I think he also had like some hits. Like if you go back and watch like one of the, like, I think it was D3, like they're shooting like the goal celebration for some of the players. And you just see like Fulton Reed, go back and watch this. This happens. Fulton Reed, like standing over two opposing players, like sprawled out on the ice, doing one of those like flex on them celebrations.
I like that.
This is an actual scene that you notice. It's in the background, but it's like everybody's like celebrating a goal, and like this implication that Fulton Reed just decked like two high school kids who were like now like unconscious on the ice. But yeah, somebody needs to go back and find that one clip. But for me, I was gonna say that. I was gonna say Fulton Reed overrated.
Well, that was supposed to be the spicy take.
That's not what I was going for.
Okay.
I have a spicier take than Fulton Reed.
Okay.
My underrated, there's two people I'm really thinking of. You know what? This is our podcast. I'll just say them both. Guy Germain and Connie Moreau are dangerously underrated Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because they do all the scoring.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like, Guy Germain, like, watch Guy Germain from, like, the first Mighty Ducks movie. I mean, he's, like, the star of the team. Like, there's, like, the, you know, the championship. Adam Banks scored that one goal. Like, he was implied to be, like, the best player, but then he got knocked out. Adam Banks has been, like, injured in two Mighty Ducks movies.
That's kind of his thing.
Yeah, he's, like, the PK Subban of... The Mighty Ducks. But
that was ugly.
I mean, it's accurate, but
that was ugly.
Well, I mean, trying to think of like another player who's like disappeared due to injuries.
Well, that's fair.
Came in with hype and then vanished.
That's fair.
There's no, but yeah, I mean, Guy Germain was like lights out, and then like Connie Moreau is like scoring all these goals, like fantastic.
Yeah, it as the rise of the Ducks in that first movie, especially, they are the ones who are consistently doing what needs to be done on the ice. You're right.
Yeah. So, show some love for Connie and G.
I think that's fair.
The power couple of the Mighty Ducks movies.
Yes.
Besides Charlie's mom and whoever he was like pimping her out to.
Oh no.
Well, no. Okay, that was the other thing I wanted to bring up. Did anybody else find it weird that like Charlie Conway is trying to set up his mom?
No, I don't think that's weird.
No, you know, he's like talking with his coach who he hated 5 minutes ago, and he's like, you know, my mom is single.
Well, but here's the thing. How many guys has she brought home that are just awful? What does he say? You know, everything's fine and great, and they meet me, and then it's Splitsville, right? You know, he's trying to have some kind of hand in who his mother ends up with. He wants to find someone who's not going to be afraid of being around him. And if it's somebody that he likes, that likes being around him, that's just a win-win for him. I don't see it as weird at all.
Yeah, but okay. So here's the other part of that. So she gets with Gordon Bombay.
Right.
They like fall in love. That was the big climax. What, like a year and a half passed, I think, between like D1 and D2. And how do they open D2? They tell... It's a throwaway scene, but Gordon Bombay and not Hans, his brother,
Jan,
they're talking, and Charlie's mom got remarried.
Yeah,
in that 1.5 year.
Yeah, it happens.
And then you she's know, like then what? She's single again in the third one. What's going on here?
She, from what I can tell, she doesn't have a good track record choosing a partner.
Is she like the Tony D'Angelo of people? Like a fictional, man. Like people in the dating pool in Duluth, Minnesota?
Is it possible that she's just finding all the Tony's D'Angelo that are out there?
She could. I don't know. Maybe that was like a deleted scene. You know, Charlie's sitting at the lake and it's like, well, he brought up his podcast. I scored my first goal in U14 and he came on the ice and stole the puck from me.
Oh, he said it was normal. He said it was normal. Yeah. They're sending it off to be framed.
Comes back with a bar stool sticker on it.
Oh, man.
Just punches him in the locker room.
Tells him it's rookie hazing.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
Okay. So we've gotten to overrated.
Yeah.
The
spicy take here. Is that what you're waiting for?
Yes.
So you're going to make me go first, aren't you?
Yes. Because I kind of want to see if we have the same one. Because I think we might have the same thought process.
You know, for someone to be overrated, it means they have to be rated very highly. I think, you know, it's not very easy to say that someone, I mean, let's take an example. Let's take Averman, right? Averman, he's out there, he's doing his thing. He's not very funny anymore. He probably wasn't then, if I recall, but you know, like he's never just absolutely horrible, but he's also never like carried off the ice on everyone's shoulders because he's done heroic things.
Yeah.
Right. So, oh, yeah. I mean, you couldn't say someone like Averman was overrated unless he was out there doing Goldberg stuff, right? And then they treated him like a hero. Correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's okay. Not... Yeah, I mean, yeah. I would say I'm that's
just,
fair.
I mean, just think there's a lot of people in here who just... There's a lot of players. They go out, they do what they need to do, but they're also, you know, no one is trying to acquire their rookie cards or get their autographs. They're role players, right? So I think if you're going to be overrated, you have to be celebrated. Ooh, that rhymes. Look at that.
There you go.
Way
to go, Run the Jewels.
Yeah, thank you. Just a regular Bill Shakespeare over here. But I guess the thing is, you know, you take the players that are rated very highly on the team. And what's funny is, okay, so you look at the original movie, you've got a lot of players that are there. You've only got a few that are rated very highly, but then you go to the second movie and you see a lot of players that come in very highly touted, right? You know, they bring in the Cat, they bring in Dwayne, they bring in Ken Wu, you know, you've got Dean Portman, you've got Luis Mendoza. You've got a lot of people that come in and it's like, oh, we're bringing in the best of the best. So you have a lot of opportunity there for someone to be very highly overrated, right?
But this is a lot of setup for this spicy answer.
Well, but my thing is, do any of those players come in and just disappoint? Do any of those players that come in so highly rated come in and just, you know, they're just terrible? No.
And what did Ken Wu do?
What didn't Ken Wu do? He could turn the world on with a smile, okay?
Did he turn the world on with a smile?
Well, no, but he did some really cool spin moves, and then he was a little Bash brother. Come on.
Yeah, but that's it.
I mean, he elevated his game, right?
He scored one goal, I think, in all two movies he was in.
And then he also inspired the team through his physical play. Yeah, when the smallest guy on the ice.
I think you're dying on the Ken Wu hill here.
Okay, well, maybe it's a hill worth dying on. Okay, anyway. But, you know, why was Ken Wu brought to the team? It wasn't because he was outstanding at hockey. It was because he was quick and he could get through, you know, small areas and do the whole Rocco Grimaldi thing. So, you know, maybe he's not one that would qualify as being very highly rated as a hockey player. So, you know, let's just kind of focus on the original Ducks, if that makes sense. So you're looking at the original Ducks. All right. You know, we've talked a couple of times about Adam Banks, right?
Right.
Banks, the cake eater, you know, he's coming from the Hawks. He's supposed to be just lights out. But like we said, he gets hurt a lot. He's definitely, I wouldn't say celebrated once he gets to the Ducks. They like him. They finally acknowledge that he exists and is part of their team and he's accepted. But is he ever like, he's not like the guy, like who's the guy on the team? Who is the heart and soul of this team?
I mean, are you asking from a gameplay standpoint or from like how the movie is standpointed?
From how the movie is standpointed.
I mean, it's Charlie, I feel like, it's at the center of every movie.
So if you've got every movie revolving around Charlie Conway, this guy should just be an absolute lights out baller at hockey, shouldn't he?
It's taken like 15 minutes of setup, but I think we're finally agreeing on the answer to this.
So are you saying that Charlie Conway is the most overrated Mighty Duck?
I am saying Charlie Conway is the most overrated Mighty Duck.
Wow.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying too.
Tell me why.
But here, so first off, he was basically the star of the first movie. Like, kid star. Let's put it that way.
Clearly Emilio Estevez is the star.
Oh yeah. I mean, you have that Breakfast Club rub, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think Charlie Conway did like three cool things the entire series, like from an on ice standpoint. But I mean, like his he was the center of the first movie. Right. He didn't do anything until the shootout goal.
Right.
And if I may remind you, his teammates didn't even want him to take that shootout goal.
Very true.
If you remember, the line was, all right, who should take it? Everybody said, I think Guy should take it. And everybody cheered because Guy Germain is underrated.
Right.
And then it was Emilio Estevez, Gordon Bombay, who said, what about Charlie?
Man.
Probably because he wanted to be the good adoptive dad figure.
Yeah, there. I think that's exactly the reason.
He's probably like, hey, you know what? This kid set me up with his mom. Things are going well. I should probably throw him a bone.
Yep.
Give him a moment to forget. How great would that movie have ended up if, you know, he says, well, what about Charlie? And then you just hear somebody from off camera, Lester Averman, go, what about Charlie? He sucks.
That would be the Averman line.
Yeah. And then he didn't even play in like the championship winning tournament for the second one.
Yeah.
I will say he heated up a little bit in the third one. I think he scored a hat trick in his first game as like the Eden Hall Warriors JV guy. But then what did he do? Just was a good leader.
Yeah.
You know, he is Charlie Conway is the Luke Glendening of the Mighty Ducks.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Like, great, great player, okay player, but you're not rebuilding the Detroit Red Wings around him.
No.
Yeah, so why would you build the Mighty Ducks around Charlie Conway?
I'm going to go on, and I'm going to say this, and it may be the wrong thing to say. I'm going to say the best thing, or the biggest way that Charlie Conway contributed to the Mighty Ducks was by giving up his jersey.
How bad is that?
So Banks could come back in when returning from IR.
Do you think the Preds do that if they start having too many players come back at once?
What, pull a Conway?
Yeah, like, you know, Philip Forsberg walks into the locker room, you know, twists his stick and said, Coach, all better now.
All better.
And Hines just looks at him and says, Well, Phil,
I'm sorry.
We've already got a full roster. I mean, at that point, who takes the... Is that like Ryan Johansson walks over there, you know, takes off his shirt, and it's like, he can have my spot.
Well, you know, I don't know that that's who would do it, but I don't know. I mean, potentially, but we're also at a point now in the season where there's no roster limit, right?
That's true, but I mean...
So we don't have to worry.
If you have 20 people in a game.
Oh, yeah, well, in a game, you know, but... Yeah, I guess if you're limited to like, hey, these are the 20 guys we've got, that's all we can have, and then Forsberg rolls back in, I think somebody may give up that jersey.
Also, you know, on the Charlie Conway point, when he gave up the jersey, no one protested.
Nope.
It was the championship game.
No, Charlie, don't. You're so good at hockey.
It was the championship game. I mean, Bombay could have easily like, nah, dude. Averman, what have you done? Get on the bench.
Yeah.
Make some quips with your little curly freckled face.
Yes. Dumb keep
head.
Resurrecting the ghost of Rob Schneider.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, nobody is like, everybody's like, okay, well, yeah, that's a reasonable choice for a healthy scratch. I feel like if you're going into a championship game against a team that beat you, what was it, like 10-1 that first game they played against Iceland? Yeah, I mean, so. I feel like there should have been more protest if Charlie Conway was like glue that held that team together.
Yeah, they you know what, they're done with Charlie at that point. They don't care anymore.
What NHL team would Charlie Conway be a fit on?
Huh.
I feel like he's a player that would just wind up on the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and he would get hot for a minute, and everyone would be like, "Whoa, this guy's great!" And then they'd probably trade him.
Somewhere. He'd have like an 18 goal, 12 assist season.
Yeah,
and
trade him at the deadline.
Like, yeah. He would sign like a 4-year, like $3.5 million a year contract with like Calgary the next year, and then
he'd never hear from him again.
Yeah, and then be on waivers the next year.
Next thing you know, he's like a cattle rancher.
Exactly, or playing in the AHL.
I like
with Matt Bolesky and David Backes.
No, I like the cattle ranch thing better.
The cattle ranch.
Yeah, I want him to be completely in. They'll do like a feature, like catching up with Charlie Conway, and they'll be like, "Oh, so why did you choose cattle ranching?" And he's like, "Well, I made some bad decisions here in Calgary and wasn't really that good."
Why not duck raising to support his old mascot?
Well, what would you be doing with the ducks that you were raising?
I don't know.
You be raising them to eat?
Duck? I mean, I guess, but
what other purpose?
Just have like a little kiddie pool in the back with ducklings.
Oh no! So I was like, I meant like he was like a big time.
Oh, like farming like duck? That. No.
Oh, like he's a cattle rancher and he just has a few ducks on the side.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, he can do
like
that.
Little playthings.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't know. Have you ever?
I mean, when I put it like that, it sounds bad. But
have you ever played with a duck before?
Yes.
They can't catch like worth anything.
Well, Charlie Conway can't play hockey worth anything, so they have something in common.
Well, there you go. Great point.
Well, this was a great Mighty Ducks discussion.
It was.
It was. I feel like that's a perfect note to end the podcast on.
I like that. Oh, yeah. I like that a lot.
You hesitated. Did you have another point?
I thought we could throw some trivia out there.
Okay, throw some trivia.
And look, I'm just going to assume that everyone who clicks on the podcast has listened this far. And they've stayed with us to the end. And they're thirsty for more. And they've said, you know what, if there's a trivia question at the end, I'm not going to cheat on it at all. And I'm going to guess online at the Forecheck Pod account. And they're going to guess the answer to this question. But I want to know if anyone knows who Aaron Lohr, who is the actor that played Dean Portman in the Mighty Ducks 2 and 3, who is he married to? Who is his famous spouse?
Well, I know the answer, so I'm not going to say it
out
loud. Yeah,
don't say it out loud. Don't say it out loud. But if anybody knows that, what I want you to do, I want you to go to Twitter, to the twitter.com, and go to our Twitter account, which is just at ForecheckPod, and go ahead and tweet that answer out to us. You can tag me in it. That's at SCSOTF. I'd like to know if you can come up with that without cheating.
I mean, I feel like people are going to cheat.
Well, that's fine. Just don't do it. Don't tell me you cheated.
Yes. Take some magic out of it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a good way to end the podcast on right there. Yes. Cause I want to see if anybody comes up with this.
Yep.
It's also a good sign that people listened.
Yeah. I'll just be here on Kin Woo Hill waiting.
Yes. Hopefully not dying on it.
Oh, I don't know. It's worth it.
We go from Bunker Hill to Kin Woo Hill, the two deadliest hill disasters in American history.
Exactly.
All right, Sean. Well, tell the fine people where they can find you.
Well, as I already mentioned, you can find me on Twitter at SCSOTF. You can, of course, find my writing at On the Forecheck, which is our website. It's ontheforecheck.com. You can also catch me on the Renegades of Puck radio show every game day morning at 5 o'clock on 560 AM in the greater Nashville area.
I have nothing cool like that, but you can find me on Twitter at _NSMorgan. Although I should say I'm doing a little social media hiatus for the time being. Just clear the old mental health slate.
Not a bad idea.
But every once in a while, you'll see me tweet something snarky. You can also, as always, find my work at ontheforecheck.com. Have a couple of pieces dropping this week. I don't want to spoil it, but it is a fun little historical look back. So be on the lookout for that. And on that note, we'll bid you guys good day. Enjoy your week. We'll be back here next week talking about all the happenings from this weekend's Chicago series.
Ooh, yeah. That'll be fun.
Yeah. We'll see where we are in the playoff race. All right.
It'll be fun.
I hope it will be fun or painful. Either one. We'll tune in to find out. See you, everybody.